Final hour overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app. Your home smart speaker up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Zeodog, Jeff O'Neill. Jamie Noodles McLennan. The Jays coming off a great win last night. Kevin Gausman was outstanding. Goes seven strong, no earned runs, 10 Ks. That was incredibly necessary. Vladdy hit a bomb last night. Springer hit a bomb last night. Bichette with a couple of hits. You know, the Jays are in a good spot. They're okay.
Yep.
You know, they're breathing again. Like, they've been dropping series. They're in a hunt here with the wild card, but they're still, you know, solidly in a wild card spot. And it rolls over to tonight where our boy Ross Stripling's on the mound.
Oh.
And yeah, chicken strips.
He's been very consistent. Like, I actually go into a game tonight. He's you know, Michael Walker's on the mound for the Sox, and he's been really, really good. So it's a tough outing, and I would assume the Sox, coming off a loss last night, the way they've been playing, the way their bats have been alive, for Boston to be in a position where they're obviously looking to respond. But I don't feel uneasy with chicken strips on the mound. I don't.
Who gets under my skin, Hayes, is Verdugo.
Yes.
I don't know what it is. It's just, I see his face and I'm like, you are enemy number one in the AL East when I see your face. And I don't know why.
He's got a cocky vibe to him.
He's got this massive Mr. T startup kit cooking on around his neck. It's, I don't know what it is. His number, everything. He's just got a vibe to him where it's like, maybe chicken strips, you know, throw some cheese at him.
Go at him tonight. Yeah, Verdugo, he had a couple of hits last night. Yeah, you go through their lineup, they got their first baseman hitting ninth. Like Bobby Dalbec, who's not had a good year at all. His stats have been awful. But they're loaded. Devers, Martinez, Bogarts has been great this year. Stories fit in pretty well. You know, like they got a good lineup. Boston's got a good lineup. And the Jays have a good lineup as well, and it rolls over to tonight with chicken strips on the mound, and Ben Verlander will join us here in just a moment. I kept teasing the Kershaw audio, and I didn't get to it yesterday. I want to play it here because Freddie Freeman fired his agent.
Dude, I don't get it. I was going to ask Ben about that. Like, you're in control. You pick where you want to go. I don't understand how he's mad at his agent.
I think Freddie Freeman has made it clear, based on his reaction and going back to Atlanta, which was always going to be overly emotional. That's all he's known. He just won a World Series there. He won an MVP there. He wanted to go back.
Then tell your agent you want to go back and make it work. Give me a break, Brian.
What are you yelling at me for? I'm not Freddie Freeman. I'm just saying.
I know, but for him to say I wanted my agent to make it work and he didn't make it work, that's outrageous.
It seems outrageous.
Their final offer where they said we're going to walk away if you don't accept this one. If you wanted to stay, that's what you had to take.
Right.
But you are,
and I'm pretty sure it wasn't embarrassing.
You tell your agent what you want. The agent, it's not the other way.
Exactly. And Freeman, he decided to fire them after the deal's done and after he's in L.A.
Like, if I'm the GM of the Dodgers, I'm looking at that saying, what the hell is going on here? Like, this
nonsense
is how you're going to react to signing on our team.
Well.
And you're going to fire your agent and you're saying you're pissed off at how things transpired.
I
mean, give me a break.
I don't think you even need to go to the GM because the ace of the staff, right, it may not be the ace anymore with Walker Buehler there and others, but he's one of the great Dodgers of all time. He's the face of your team, Kershaw. Clayton Kershaw is not a guy that I consider to be someone, you know, he's a Texan. He's got a Matt Stafford vibe. He's generally just kind of off the cuff and relaxed and nonchalant. I don't recall him saying a lot throughout his career that has been overly flamboyant or controversial.
Right.
Here is what Kershaw had to say over the weekend in Atlanta when he was asked about the way Freddie Freeman had responded to being home and being back in Atlanta.
Yeah, it's been great. You know, he's obviously been a big contributor to our team. And, you know, I hope we're not second fiddle. You know, it's a pretty special team over here too, you know. So I think that whenever he gets comfortable over here, he'll really enjoy it. And, it was a good night for him last night.
So those beats are, that's so obnoxious. The the music, like we couldn't drain that out somehow. I could barely hear Kershaw.
And it's awesome, though.
That was unbelievable.
Is he like sitting at a booth?
Honestly,
a
where is he? Like, where is he? Is he, like, what club is he at exactly? What was that peeler joint in Atlanta that apparently had the great wings?
The Cheetah.
Yeah.
The Cheetah.
Allegedly.
Maybe he was at the Cheetah.
Yeah.
But listen, he said, awesome to see Freddie. Obviously, great to have him. He's been great with us. Hopefully, we're not playing second fiddle. And then he said, you know, hopefully, once it gets to a point, he'll realize, like, we're a good team, too, and we're fun to be effectively. Like, I read that as this guy's walking around pouting that he's with the Dodgers. And the Dodgers are starting to get disappointed.
It is a bad look.
It's a bad look, man. He needs to sack up and figure things out because it's a terrible look.
You signed your deal, you left. Like Atlanta, I'll bet you, I'll guarantee you Anthopoulos has regrets. We know he does. We asked Anthopoulos, and he's sick over the fact that Freeman left.
Do you think there was a phone call play saying, look, can we get him back? You want him back? Like, well, you think that call's been made?
I think it's too early. And if you're the Dodgers, why would you do that? He's still having a good year. Like, he's not hitting for a ton of pop, but I'm looking at his stats, getting 876 OPS. Like, you sign him as a left-handed bat who's going to come in here and perform for you.
He's got to settle in.
He's just got to settle in. Yeah. But he's, you know, he's 40. He's well into the season now. We're almost into July, and Freddie Freeman is still, like, pouting about leaving the Braves. Here's Ben Verlander of Fox Sports, and you can check out his podcast, Flippin' Bats Podcast. Ben, I'm not sure if you heard that Kershaw audio of Freeman and him being, Kershaw being concerned that.
I did.
Okay.
I did hear it.
How did you interpret that, and what kind of message was Kershaw sending?
I mean, that's not something. Kershaw is always very articulate with his words and, you know, doesn't really, you know, so to hear him say something like that is pretty alarming. And, you know, that's the quote. I didn't hear him say it. I didn't hear the whole interview or however he said it. But the fact that he even said that, I think, is a pretty big deal. And the whole situation is pretty alarming. You know, we haven't seen something like that really in sports that I can remember, in any sport, where a player was so prominent and goes back and almost, I mean, the word miserable comes to mind. He looked miserable being on the other side of the field and didn't spend a lot of time in his own clubhouse, which I get. You know, you go back somewhere, you spend your whole career, you have a million people to say hi to, teammates, workers, concession workers, you know, you get to know everybody, security. But it was weird. I mean, there were shots of him in the stands, or he wasn't in the stands. There were shots of him standing at first base where he just looked sad. And I don't remember seeing anything like that in my time watching sports.
How could he be disappointed in his representation, Ben, when you're the player, you run the show, your agent does what he's told to? If he wanted to stay, he could have said to his agent, make it happen, I'll take a haircut, whatever. But I'm pretty sure the Braves weren't like, you're never playing here again. I don't believe that to be the scenario. So what the hell was the problem with this guy?
Well, you don't even reach out to, at a certain point, you don't reach out to your agent and say, hey, make this happen. You reach out to Anthopoulos as Freddie Freeman and say, hey, I don't know what's going on. Let's figure this out. You want me to be here. I want to be here. Let's make this happen. At a certain point, you get your agent out of the way and just say, hey, I want to get this done. You stop going to the GM, you stop the agent to GM talk, and you do player to owner, where you know there's a really good relationship, and you know you want it to work out. So it is odd, and it's odd that he's been with that same agent since then. Today we've started to hear that he's moving on, but then he came out with a statement saying not quite. It's just a really weird situation that, I don't know if Freddie just thought it was a foregone conclusion that it was going to get figured out and he was going to end up back in Atlanta. And then, he just at the drop of a hat heard that it wasn't happening. But it is weird that he didn't reach out directly and make it happen. And it is weird that if it was all the agent's fault, that he is still with him to this day.
We're chatting with Ben Verlander of Fox Sports. Check out the podcast, Flippin' Bats Podcast. So, up here in Toronto, Kevin Gausman, he stopped the bleeding last night. You know, there was a lot of concern going into the game last night that the bullpen had been overworked. Barrios has been a mess recently. Kikuchi's been a mess recently. But Gausman got the job done. And I'm curious, you know, how you see it. We're right in the middle of things here. We're in the eye of the storm where everything the Jays do, we're all over it constantly. As an outsider, when you look at Barrios and the way that he's performing, and considering he got the contract before the season started, how concerned are you about the way he's been pitching, and how concerned would you be with the idea that maybe this year he won't get it back on the rails? Like, at some point we believe he will. Of course he will. He hasn't forgotten how to pitch. But do you expect by the end of September you're looking at it thinking Berríos is all good, he'll be fine come playoff time? Or is there enough data here that maybe it should be a little bit more concerning in terms of the big picture in the whole season?
I do have concerns. I'm worried about it. It hasn't been great, and his ERA is, as you guys know,
it's in the fives.
Yeah, and it's alarming. You know, I watch him pitch, and it just doesn't seem like the Berríos that we've all got, you know, that we saw with the Twins, and then he moves over to the Blue Jays, and he was really good there for a while. And I'd be remiss if I didn't say I had some concerns. I'm hopeful that he can regain that. And you look, if you're the Blue Jays, in my opinion, they're a playoff team. They're going to be in the playoffs. So do you need Jose Berríos' ERA to be down around 3 or 4 when the playoffs come around? No. You need him to be himself when the playoffs come around. I don't care if he has a 6 ERA going into September. If he can figure it out by September, and by the time playoffs come around, which this team is built to win right now. This Blue Jays team is no more, okay, let's make it to the playoffs and then the year is a success. This team is fantastic. They are one of the best teams in the league, and they need to win in the playoffs, and they are built to win right now, and he is a big part of that. So if you're a fan, I think there's cause for concern, as I have concern, but you just need him to be himself come playoff time, come the end of the year, and I do believe there is a good possibility that happens and he figures it out. Maybe this All-Star break will be great for him, a little bit of a reset, and then have a great second half. I'm hopeful he does, and I know Blue Jays fans are hopeful and wanting him to, but I do believe it's a possibility. I just don't think he needs to have a dominant regular season to prove it. You just need Berríos to be Berríos in October.
How close to the top of your Cy Young ballot is Alec Manoah through 15 starts this season?
Very. He's a top three guy for me right now. I mean, look, the guy's got a 2 ERA, 2.05, something like that.
Yeah, 2.05 ERA.
He's been dominant. I mean, he's got 9 wins. He's tied for the lead in wins. He's been fantastic. And, you know, it just seems like a guy like him has been flying under the radar so far. And I don't want to say just this year. I mean, in his career, since he got the call-up, since his first start at Yankee Stadium when he dominated, I mean, this guy has been one of the best pitchers in baseball since he got the call-up. This year, he has been certainly one of the best pitchers in baseball. And I just don't feel like we hear that name in terms of Cy Young conversations as much as we should. We hear Shane McClanahan a lot. We hear some guy named Justin Verlander a lot. Mm-hmm. And I think Alec Manoah should be in that conversation a lot more, if not in terms of being a Cy Young finalist. He should absolutely be in that conversation at this point in the year. He has been dominant. You look at that rotation in the Blue Jays, and everybody talks about Gausman, as they should, and Berríos. That was kind of the two. When you look at that year, this team, it's built around those guys. These are the guys in the rotation that are going to be guys. Well, the beauty of all of this, if there is any beauty in Berríos struggling, is that what Alec Manoah has done this year is picked up that slack and more. So it's been incredible what he has been able to do on a team that really needs it. You know, you didn't expect it. This rotation coming into the year looked really good. Berríos and then Ryu, and now look where it is. And things have changed. And Alec Manoah, being the guy that he has been this year, has held it all together and allowed the Blue Jays to be where they are. And he deserves a ton of credit for what he has done personally, but also for what he has done and meant to this Blue Jays team. I think he deserves all the credit in the world and a lot more than he's getting, honestly.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the stats, McClanahan has a 1.77 ERA among starting pitchers in the American League. Manoah is second at 2.05. Your brother, Verlander, he's at 2.22. Wins above replacement, he's at a 3.1 WAR, and that is more than anyone else in the American League. For starters, yeah. Like, Martin Perez is at a 3. McClanahan's at a 2.8. You got Gilbert up there, Blackburn up there. Walk has had a great year, a bunch of Yankee pitchers clearly. But he's got a 3.1 wins above replacement. No other starter in the American League has that number. I mean,
it says a lot. That's a remarkable number. Yeah, and look, there's other names you mentioned, McClanahan and Justin. McClanahan, look, the Rays, nobody really knows how the Rays do it every year. It's not from a dominant, you know, it hasn't really been from a dominant pitcher, and it hasn't been from a dominant lineup. They just all compete to the best of their ability all year long, and when you look at the record at the end of the year, it's good enough to be in the playoffs. And with Justin, he's part of a team that is incredible. You know, the rotation is really good, the offense is really good, but when you look at Alek Manoah this year and what he has meant to the Blue Jays, I mean, I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility to say that, you know, he's holding it all together this year for a team that is super talented, that should be, you know, even better than they are. But when you look at what they've gotten from the rotation with Berríos and what's happened to Ryu, he has been vital to that team being where they are. So no discredit to the other guys, obviously. One of them is my family member. But what Manoah has meant to the Blue Jays this year, I almost argue, is more valuable because they've needed him so much.
Where was Alejandro Kirk on your bingo card at the start of the season for being a potential All-Star?
On the bingo card, he wasn't on it. But on my All-Star voting ballot a couple days ago, he was right on it at the top.
It should be.
It's so cool what he's been able to do this year. And if he is not the All-Star game starter, then we have done something terribly, terribly wrong. But I have no fear because Toronto fans have come out in full force, and the ballots are full of Toronto Blue Jays. It's cool to see. Look, he deserves every bit of the starting nod at the All-Star game. It's really cool what he's been able to do this year, and certainly unexpected.
Yeah, I mean, this guy's gone from folk hero to like legitimate piece. It's not just kind of joking around about how small he is and wow, he can hit with power. This guy is like one of the toughest outs in Major League Baseball.
Every time he gets a hit, Hayes, somebody tweets it. I don't know. I think it's Paul Ross who works in our building. Alejandro Kirk is a professional hitter.
Right.
That's it. That's all he tweets.
Yeah, he's a pro hitter. And that's a compliment, right, Ben? I mean, you can't give a better compliment than that.
No, you can't. A pro hitter is what you can ask for.
Yep, especially at that position where it doesn't happen all the time. So we'll see. Jay Sox tonight. Enjoy that among the other games. Always great catching up with you. Thank you for doing this.
Of course, guys. Thanks for having me, as always.
There's Ben Verlander of Fox Sports Flippin' Bats podcast. His brother Justin Verlander is certainly in the mix for sure for a Cy Young, considering the injuries coming off, too. It's incredible. Shohei Ohtani's numbers as a starter. He is
about him every day, which is unbelievable because it's because
something else pops up. Like I looked at it because I was looking at the wins above replacement in the American League. All right, so Manoah has a 3.1. All right, and that leads all starting pitchers for wins above replacement in the American League. Justin Verlander, who's had a phenomenal year, has a 1.9. Verlander's got a 2.22 ERA. He's got a 0.87 WHIP. So I don't even know how this is possible, but when you consider those numbers, he has a 1.9 wins above replacement as a starting pitcher, Justin Verlander. Shohei Ohtani has a 2 wins above replacement. He has a higher WAR than Verlander as a starting pitcher, not as a complete player, not as a pitcher plus batter.
What was your analogy the other day?
Simply his arm.
What was your analogy the other day? It was like, If
Vladdy could throw 100 and come out of the bullpen, or
that's right.
Yeah, Wayne Gretzky was a backup goalie, but not even. Like, Gretzky would have to every third or fourth game be a starter up for the Vezina.
Yeah, he'd be Markstrom, or be Vasilevsky, or Shesterkin.
I don't even know, man.
It's kind of the real life version, or the modern kind of version of like Bo Jackson, where you're just like, how the hell does this guy do this?
Yeah,
where it's not playing two different sports, but it's like what a special athlete.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. You know what I'm just seeing online now? We just talked about this in the last hour. Kevin Durant taking a shot at Shaq, and now Shaq is responding on Twitter.
Oh, you know, I don't know if you want to get in with that.
Shaq may not be the, but listen, KD's got an issue with that whole. He hates Barkley. Like, if Barkley goes at him, and remember when KD was on and he refused to answer any questions after a game, and they kept peppering him, and he just wouldn't give it to him. And then he was the all-star team captain just as the Harden stuff was going down, and they were goofing on Harden, and KD was trying not to smile.
Let's hear this back and forth. What did KD say to Shaq, and then what did Shaq?
And the NBA on ESPN posted, a comment, a quote from Shaq, where Shaq was talking about Rudy Gobert. And he was on some podcast, and Shaq said, quote, "You think I'm happy Rudy Gobert's making $250 million? Goddamn right we get mad. We get petty. I think it's a little bit of truth in our criticism." So basically, Shaq is mad that Rudy Gobert is making the money he's making. And probably because he's thinking, when I was a player and I was 10 times the player that's Rudy Gobert, I wasn't making that kind of money.
Right.
KD, Kevin Durant, quote tweeted that by saying, "Shaquille is hilarious. You're a billionaire, bro. LOL."
Right.
So basically saying, you know, why are you so mad at what other guys are making? You are worth a fortune, which is true.
Which is fair comment.
Which is true. Fair. But Shaq is speaking as, when I was a player, like old school players, they hate new school players, and they hate the new school money. That always happens.
Yeah.
Shaq just responded 3 minutes ago. "I know I'm hilarious, and I'm not a billionaire. I'm actually broke, but we'll always speak facts. Thank you for saying I'm funny. It means a lot." So no one actually believes that he's broke. But that's probably the way Shaq should respond.
Yeah.
You know, like, why go back and forth with KD? But this has nothing to do with Kevin Durant. Like, that's the thing that...
That's
again,
why. He kind of spoke out of turn there where it's like, dude, that's not directed at you. Just kind of stay out of it and don't cause problems.
Right. If Rudy Gobert responds, I get it. Right. If Donovan Mitchell or teammates down in Utah decide to respond, okay, that's one thing. As far as I know, Kevin Durant has no relationship with Rudy Gobert. Doesn't know him. He's never played with him.
Yeah.
What? Why do you have to have a comment on what Shaq said?
Because he's involved. He's got his hands on everything.
He's got his hands on everything.
He just had to respond there. He couldn't stop himself.
But he's allowed to, and Shaq's allowed to respond. But,
dude, I tell you what. I bet you once every 2 weeks, I would bet that KD, if you could sit him down and get the truth, I bet you he fires out a tweet from an account that he does, like, he thinks it's the wrong one. I think he goes ghost account and he's not on the right one, and it's the KD account, and he's like, "Damn, what was I doing?"
He's been caught before, and I wouldn't find that surprising if it happened again.
I don't know.
You get into the whole dummy account stuff and the back and forth.
That's,
man,
a lot of
people.
I feel like it's a lot of work to create. Like,
it's a lot of work. It is a lot of work.
I don't know.
Anyway. All right, Bob McKenzie's coming up. We got Bobby Mack. He's causing a stir with his rankings.
Yes, he is.
Shane Wright, is he a lock to go first overall to Montreal? We'll ask Bob about that, among many other things. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, confirm or deny after dark coming up. We got our best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Jay's back in action tonight. We'll keep teeing that up. But the NHL draft is next on the docket now that the cup has been handed out. And we always wait for Bob McKenzie and his final rankings. And I think some heads are going to explode.
Well, he has.
Because Shane Wright is not at number one on Bob's final
list.
He's doing him dirty
like he did me.
He is causing a stir.
Yes, he is. Here he is, the hockey outsider, our good friend Bob McKenzie. What are you doing here, Bob? Are you causing a stir with the board or what?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I get it. I knew there would be a stir because many Montreal Canadian fans have it in their mind that Montreal is absolutely 100% going to take Shane Wright. They should take Shane Wright, and to consider anything else is ridiculous. And to what I would say to that would be this. The list is not a prediction, a forecast of who I think Montreal should take or will take. In fact, when the list is put together, the last thing, there's zero consideration given to which team is picking in which slot. It's not a mock draft. It's not a forecast as to which team is going to take which guy. Montreal Canadiens don't even enter into the equation. I interview 10 scouts. I ask them for the numerical rankings of the players. 5 scouts said Slavkovsky, the big Slovak winger. 4 scouts said Shane Wright. Simple as that. They're not saying who they think Montreal is going to take. They're saying our team or me have this guy, Slavkovsky, at number one on our list. And so the second point, and I just said it, but it bears repeating, is that it's really, really close. So I often do this. So five guys say Slavkovsky, four guys say Wright, one guy says Logan Cooley, and there's my 10. So because it's so close, I'm curious. So now I start calling scouts that aren't normally on the list of the guys that I deal with or whatever, other teams, and I call them and I say, Slavkovsky or Wright. So I start doing that. Now I do another four or five guys, and guess what? You know, three of the five said it was Wright. I'm absolutely convinced that if I did another 10 scouts on top of the 10 that I did, that it easily could have been five for Wright, four for Slavkovsky, one for Cooley. It's that close. So I don't really understand why anybody would get bent out of shape. And yet, you know, I don't want to undercut it and say the ratings don't mean anything because, in a manner of speaking, when it's that close, they don't. But that's not probably the smartest thing for me to say.
You're an outsider now, Bob.
I'm a terrible salesman, but that's the reality. The reality is it's very, very close. And, you know, and I don't know what Montreal is going to do. And if anybody who says they do know what Montreal is going to do, I don't think they know. And so, you know, could Montreal take Wright at number one? Absolutely. Could they take Slavkovsky? Yeah, absolutely. And could they take somebody else? I don't think so. I think it'll be one of those two guys. And we'll find out next Wednesday, whatever day it is, the draft time.
When you're thinking about who Montreal's going to take, Bobby, you have to wonder how much sense taking Shane Wright would be. And just like Jim Taddy, we used to talk about duplicate players. Like, they already have Suzuki there, who's a right-handed shot, who's an extremely well-rounded player. Do you need one of kind of the same coming in there at the number two hole? I don't know how much sense that makes. So something different, a dynamic left-handed skater, a shooting, I don't even know what this guy is, power forward. Gord Miller described him as somewhat Jagr-like. That would interest me. That would excite me to have kind of that different element.
Well, what I would say to that, though, is that I learned a long time ago from talking to so many scouts, when you're picking first overall, you take the best player available.
Sure.
Now, you don't draft for position at number one. You just don't. Unless it's such a coin flip, it's such a jumble, and this year very much looks like that. So you could err on the side of taking a position player. But at the end of the day, the scout, your chief scout, and or your general manager, the general managers obviously get involved in this stuff, especially with the first overall pick. It's an organizational thing. You've got to make a quantifiable decision. Who's the best player? Is it clear-cut who's best? And if it's not clear-cut, who do we like best? And just go ahead and take it. And don't worry about the position. But this might be a draft where you can default to a position a little bit more than you otherwise would. The thing about both these guys is, and this is one thing nearly all the scouts agree on. Right now, I would say the projection, the consensus projection amongst the vast majority of scouts I talk to, is that Shane Wright projects to be a number two center in the National Hockey League. Could he be a number one? Sure, he could develop into that. But right now, the projection is he's probably, you know, a high-end number two or a low-end number one. And Slavkovsky, right now, the vast majority of scouts, the strong consensus is this guy's a top six, going to be a top six NHL winger. But like Wright, he has enough tools that he could become a first-line left winger. And oh, to your point, I mean, you're right. There's times, the first time I saw Slavkovsky was at the World Junior in a couple of years ago, and as soon as I saw him, I go, oh my God, he looks like Jagr. He's really big. He's got a big backside. At that time, he had the hair flowing. He had the Jagr mullet going the whole nine yards. And it was in the first time we went to Edmonton for the World Juniors. And I'm looking at him going, wow, Jagr. And he was scoring some goals and shooting the puck and just looked a lot like him. But here's the reality. He played in the Finnish Elite League this year. And for most of the year, he was stuck on two goals. Now, the Finnish Elite League is a hard league to put points up in. But if you want to talk to scouts about reservations, no, he lit it up in the Olympics. He lit it up at the Senior Men's World Championship. And that really clinched it for a lot of teams that were watching him. But they also have reservations about the lack of offense that he produced on a consistent basis in the Liga in Finland. And it's the same deal with Wright. Talk about reservations. They can see all sorts of comparisons. Oh, he's a great all-around player. He's a high-end number two or a low-end number one and a consummate team player and a great thing. But he didn't score as many goals this year in the OHL as he did when he was 15 years old, 2 years ago. What's with that? You know, he still had 93, 94 points, whatever it is this year. Didn't have a bad year. But there were a lot of scouts that walked out of the building on many nights this year watching him play where they were like, boy, would have liked to see him compete a little harder. Would have liked to see him score a few more goals, assert himself a little more. So both guys have attributes that guarantee they're going to be NHL players. Could even be first-line players, but no guarantee on that front. But they've also created enough question marks over the course of this season where you can't be all in and say, oh, this guy's in it. This is not Austin Matthews or Connor McDavid. It's not even Steven Stamkos or John Tavares or so many of the number one overall picks that we've seen in the past. This draft is at the top end, is a notch down from what we're used to in those situations.
Bobby, no goaltenders. It seems like you've got to look very, very far down the list to see, I think it's Tyler Brennan at 62. Just a leaner year for goaltenders or more hard? Obviously, yeah. Plus, you know, drafting goaltenders at such a young age, we're seeing a lot of those goaltenders, you know, don't get mature until 25 or 26. Is it just a leaner year?
Yeah, it certainly is. And, you know, I can't imagine that there's going to be a goalie taken in the first round. That hasn't happened since 2018. I would have guessed it was even longer than that. When the quizmaster told me, I said, hey, when was the last time there was no goalie in the first round? And I was expecting him to say, oh, it was like 22 years ago or something. And because it just seems like there's goalie, you know, Demko and Ottinger and all these guys, even back to Jack Campbell and whatever. And just Vasilevsky and all these guys. And I'm like, Samsonov and... I'm thinking there must be a really long time since there's been no goalie taken in the first round. And Quizmaster said 2018. I'm like, oh, okay. So that's how much I know. Boy, I'm the outsider. But it's just we only have two goalies. We ranked 90 players plus 10 honorable mentions, and the only two goaltenders that made the 90 were Tyler Brennan from Prince George at 62 and. Topias Laine and a Finnish goaltender, I think it's at 71. So, yeah, just an off year for high-end goaltenders. And that's not to say those guys couldn't go on to become big-time goalies, because lots, you know, I think somebody said Shesterkin was drafted X number of years ago today, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it was, you know, when they took him 178th overall or some crazy number like that. I don't think anybody envisioned him as a Vezina Trophy winner, but that's just the nature of your position, Noodles. They're all crazy.
Yeah, exactly. Impossible to get a read on with Bob McKenzie. Are you still on the Hall of Fame voting committee, Bob? I can't remember.
Yes,
you are.
I'm still on the selection committee.
Okay.
I was there yesterday and took part in the festivities.
Okay. I know none of it really gets out in terms of where people stand individually, but can you take us behind closed doors in terms of maybe the heat of the conversation, the energy in the room? Like, what's it like when there's a disagreement on a player?
You know what? I guess what I would say, I think what I'm permitted to say is just about the process. And it's no secret. There are a lot of people who say the process shouldn't be confidential. It should be wide open. Tell everybody how everybody voted, the way I believe Major League Baseball does with, you know, media ballots and what have you. Hockey's chosen to go in a different direction. They asked me to be part of the committee. I said, sure. They told me what the rules are for confidentiality, and they said, you know, you have to respect the rules, and this is what we're all about. And I'm like, okay, fair enough. If you want to be part of it, then you go in eyes wide open. These are the terms and conditions under which you go in. And what I've heard many people say, Lanny McDonald, who's involved with the selection committee, is a non-voting member in the past. John Davidson, who is the chairman of the committee as a voting member, and now Mike Gartner, who's the chairman of the committee as a voting member. And one of the things they've always stressed is they're comfortable with what they, you know, the whole secrecy element not because of the conspiracy of silence, but because they believe that promotes really honest assessments of players. And so you've got a cross-section of people, 18 people on the committee, and they're people ask them for their opinion, they offer their opinion, and in many cases, they're offering opinion on former teammates, they're offering on opinion on players they played against, they're offering opinions on whatever. And the only thing I would say is that because the process is as confidential as it is, the candor that is there is absolutely incredible. And I don't believe anybody holds anything back. So in answer to your question, I would say the 18 people in that room go in and are very earnest and truthful and pointed in their remarks, both positive and negative, on various players, because that's what they're there for. That's the whatever level of expertise they're perceived to have, that's, you know, you want honesty from people, and that's a good way to get honesty. So, as I say, those are the rules, and if you're part of it, you abide by it.
How, I guess, gratifying is it to be a part of that committee to send someone like Herb Carnegie into the Hall of Fame, which I think many have argued is long overdue, but he goes in the builder category, Toronto hockey legend, I'm sure, obviously, you're aware of. Yeah. That's a pretty cool story.
Yeah, it really is. It really is, and you're right. And it's a funny process because you really are, you know, as somebody who's always around hockey and lived your life in hockey, and all 18 members of the committee, they all have different roles in the game, but everybody has a passion for the game, and they love the game, and the history of the game, and the future of the game. And so there's this really great, when it's all done and the various players have been inducted, there is a tremendous sense of pride and excitement for those players, because you know that their day, their life just got a lot better. They're getting a phone call from Lanny McDonald or Mike Gardner telling them that they're in the Hall of Fame. You can't even imagine what it's like for, you know, next to winning a Stanley Cup, which is, you know, the ultimate honor in the National Hockey League. I don't know that there's another thing that would be as individually, you know, create a sense of pride for a career achievement as being in the Hockey Hall of Fame. So you feel good about those. And conversely, you know, you, as you go through and you see the people who didn't make it, you know, you have pangs of, wow, that's, you know, that's really, especially if it was somebody that you were promoting or nominating or whatever the case may be, you're kind of cheering for that to happen. And if it doesn't happen, you're like, I'm a little vested in this now and I feel bad for that person, but that's just the nature of the beast. But as far as Carnegie goes, I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I really think it's essential for our game that we continue to try and build a bigger tent and invite more and more people to be part of it. That's the future of the game. And we want to make sure that, you know, the level of diversity and inclusivity is infinite, and that every opportunity to expand the horizons and make everybody who's interested in being part of the game of hockey feel more welcome, and being able to amplify the story of Herb Carnegie, a player who was good enough not only to play in the National Hockey League, but some would suggest maybe star in the National Hockey League back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. You know, a little known fact about Herb Carnegie is that he probably was good enough, if the NHL had been ready to take him, where he would have beat Jackie Robinson in terms of being the guy that breaks the color barrier for professional sports in North America. The Jackie Robinson breaking the color barrier for the Brooklyn Dodgers didn't happen until the late 40s. Carnegie was good enough and in a position to be in the National Hockey League in the late 30s, early 40s. And can you imagine how hockey history would have been different, how sporting history would have been different if somebody in the National Hockey League had done what Branch Rickey did with Jackie Robinson and paved the way for that player to go against the values and norms of society at the time, of the various professional leagues. And you know, so everybody knows Willie O'Ree was the first black player in the National Hockey League, the first black player in the National Hockey League taking nothing against, away from Willie O'Ree. Should have been Herb Carnegie.
Bobby Hayes just said the term long overdue. Is there any, has there been any talk in the future of, like, not having the situation where someone's been waiting? It's like they have a certain time frame early on where they either get in or they don't. You just see players that have been waiting around too long, or it seems like it's too long. Has there ever been talk of the format changing where it's like you got a 3-year span, and if it doesn't happen, it doesn't happen?
No, I think they leave it open-ended on that, and quite frankly, you know, we've seen, and some people might not understand the dynamic, and I'm not sure even I could explain it, but, you know, Doug Wilson got in a recent class, and he's been retired for an awfully long time and obviously didn't have the requisite support or whatever, but every year is a little bit different. Sometimes there's a whole bunch of slam dunks that are first ballot guys, and that's that, and then some years there's not, and you're looking at it, and you're saying, well, we don't have to put anybody in if we don't want to. You're not obliged to put a player in. But
the argument, you know, on the other side of it, Bobby, is some people say if you got to wait that long and people have to vote that many times and you're not a Hall of Famer, maybe the idea that you're not a Hall of Famer is tossed out there.
Yeah, no, I suppose that's entirely possible, but I just think the less rules you put on things, everything can happen organically. Because, you know, what if people on the selection committee make mistakes? And I'm sure it happens. Everybody's human. So, but what about the dynamic? You've got to get 14 of 18 votes, 75% majority. And I always joke and say, if you think it's easy to get 14 of 18 people to agree on anything, get 18 of your best friends and just decide where you're going for lunch. See if you can get 14 to agree. And then do it with hockey players and their careers and everything else that goes into it. And again, the other thing is the criteria. There's no handbook that says, if you do this, 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 and this, you're a Hall of Famer. Because there's some guys that play the game for a really long period of time, and they put up an enormous number of goals, assist points over a long period of time. But, you know, they've never won individual awards, and they've never been an all-star and that. So how do you balance that against somebody who has lesser numbers but won a Hart trophy or won a couple of Norris trophies or was a first and second team All-Star 4 or 5 times but didn't put up the numbers that somebody else did because maybe they only played for 10 or 11 years instead of 20 years? So there's a million things that go into this to try and figure it out. And there's no handbook that says this number of goals or this number of points will get you in, and because you just can't do it that way. And so it is, I'll admit, it's an imperfect system. But as I say, if you said to somebody, you only got 3 years to get in, so you got to wait 3 years until you're retired. Okay, now you're eligible. If you said you've only got 3 years to get in the Hall of Famer, you're not a Hall of Famer. Well, maybe that collection of 18 guys and men and women will change over a period of time. And so it's a different perspective of people. Maybe the next wave of people that are on that committee are a lot smarter than the ones before. And maybe they've had reason to readjust their thinking on something. So I think it's always better to have less rules than more rules, because I think more rules just ties your hands. And at the end of the day, I always say, if they're meant to be Hall of Famers, they'll find 14 of 18 people that agree in any given year.
Always great catching up with you,
Bob. They haven't voted me in, Bobby.
Yeah, just a matter of time.
Well, we're not allowed to talk about it because it's a very confidential process. But
that's possible. It could.
You're a Hall of Famer, Bobby. That's all that matters, pal. Right, thanks.
Good catching up with you.
I am not a Hall of Famer. I couldn't even have made the Hall of Fame for juvenile hockey in Toronto.
Well,
no, you had the hockey hair.
True. Yeah, exactly. You look like a hockey player. That's all that matters. That's all we have.
That's all that matters. As when I covered the Sioux Greyhounds, there was a guy by the name of Perry Ardito from Sault Ste. Marie. He was a pretty funny kid. I think he ended up back in the day when he could play junior hockey and then go to college. So I think he ended up going to the University of Minnesota briefly after he played for the Sioux Greyhounds. And he was an impeccable dresser on and off the ice. And on the ice, he was one of those guys. He every bit of tape on his shin pads was perfectly synchronized. I think he probably was like, oh, that he was looking for his reflection in the glass in the warm-up. And he once uttered one of the great lines that I ever heard, and he says, you know, Bobby, it's not whether you win or lose, but how you play the game, how you look.
He's on to something there. That applies to all walks of life, Bob. You know that. Thank you for this, buddy. We'll do it again real soon.
Awesome. Thanks, boys. Have
Bob McKenzie, your TSN hockey outsider. Now, he's on the inside of that vote
at
the Hall of Fame, though.
Yeah.
We'll come back with our best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Try to squeeze in a confirm or deny after dark. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Bet on all your favorite teams in the FanDuel Sportsbook app. Looking at the Jays game tonight. Couple of things I like in this. Chicken strips, over 3.5 strikeouts tonight. I know the Sox bats have been hot, but so has Ross Stripling. I like the over. Rafael Devers has owned the Dome for a long, long time. You're getting plus 300 for a home run tonight. It's not the greatest value, but he loves this building. He loves this park, and I think it's worthy of a look. And Robbie Ray's been a lot better recently. The last seven starts, he's got a 3.43 ERA. He's at home against Baltimore tonight. I will pay the juice, and I will take Seattle at home. Today's best bets brought to you by FanDuel. Make every moment more and get your winnings fast when you download the FanDuel Sportsbook app today. All right, we got to get out of here. You know, we had a great show. We had a bunch of confirm or denies. Maybe we'll save one for tomorrow. Who knows?
It'll be fun.
We'll see what happens. It's been a fun one. We always appreciate everyone tuning in, all the help behind the scenes. We're out of here. Enjoy your evenings. Enjoy the games tonight. We're back tomorrow at
4 p.m.
We'll chat then.